Chapter 8. They who would know how beautiful the country immediately surrounding Genoa is, should climb in clear weather to the top of Monte Faccio, or, at least, ride round the city walls. A feat more easily performed. No prospect can be more diversified and lovely than the changing views of the harbor, and the valleys of the two rivers, the Polcevera and the Bisagno, from the heights along which the strongly fortified walls are carried, like the Great Wall of China in little. And not the least picturesque part of this ride, there is a fair specimen of a real Genoese tavern, where the visitor may derive good entertainment from real Genoese dishes, such as tagliarini, ravioli, German sausages, strong of garlic, sliced and eaten with fresh green figs, cock's combs and sheep kidneys, chopped up with mutton chops and liver, small pieces of some unknown part of a calf, twisted in two small shreds, fried, and served up in a great dish like whitebait, and other curiosities of that kind. They often get wine at the suburban trattery, from France and Spain and Portugal, which is brought over by small captains in little trading vessels. They buy it at so much a bottle, without asking what it is, or caring to remember, if anybody tells them, and usually divide it into two heaps, of which they label one champagne, and the other Madeira. The various opposite flavors, qualities, countries, ages, and vintages that are comprised under these two general heads is quite extraordinary. The most limited range is probably from cool gruel up to old Marsala, and down again to apple tea. The great majority of the streets are as narrow as any thoroughfare can well be, where people, even Italian people, are supposed to live and walk about, being mere lanes, with here and there a kind of well, or breathing place. The houses are immensely high, painted in all sorts of colors, and are in every stage and state of damage, dirt, and lack of repair. They are commonly let off in floors, or flats, like the houses in the old town of Edinburgh, or many houses in Paris. There are few street doors. The entrance halls are, for the most part, looked upon as public property, and any moderately enterprising scavenger might make a fine fortune by now, and then clearing them out. As it is impossible for coaches to penetrate into these streets, there are sedan chairs, gilded and otherwise, for hire in divers places. A great many private chairs are also kept among the nobility and gentry, and at night these are trotted to and fro in all directions, preceded by bearers of great lanthorns, made of linen stretched upon a frame. The sedans and lanthorns are the legitimate successors of the long strings of patient and much abused mules that go jingling their little bells through these confined streets all day long. They follow them as regularly as the stars the sun. When shall I forget the streets of palaces? The Strada Nuova and the Strada Balbi, or how the former looked one summer day, when I first saw it underneath the brightest and most intensely blue of summer skies, with its narrow perspective of immense mansions, reduced to a tapering and most precious strip of brightness, looking down upon the heavy shade below. A brightness not too common, even in July and August, to be well esteemed. For, if the truth must out, there were not eight blue skies in as many midsummer weeks, saving, sometimes, early in the morning, when, looking out to sea, the water and the firmament were one world of deep and brilliant blue. At other times, there were clouds and haze enough to make an Englishman grumble in his own climate. The endless details of these rich palaces. The walls of some of them, within, alive with masterpieces by Van Dyck. The great, heavy, stone balconies, one above another, and tier over tier. With here and there, one larger than the rest, towering high up a huge marble platform. The doorless vestibules, massively barred lower windows, immense public staircases, thick marble pillars, strong dungeon-like arches, and dreary, dreaming, echoing vaulted chambers. among which the eye wanders again, and again, and again, as every palace is succeeded by another, the terraced gardens between house and house, with green arches of the vine, and groves of orange trees, and blushing olander in full bloom. 20, 30, 40 feet above the street the painted halls, moldering, and blotting, and rotting in the damp corners, and still shining out in beautiful colors and voluptuous designs, where the walls are dry the faded figures on the outsides of the houses, holding wreaths, and crowns, and flying upward, and downward, and standing in niches, and here and there looking fainter and more feeble than elsewhere, by contrast with some fresh little cupids, who on a more recently decorated portion of the front, are stretching out what seems to be the semblance of a blanket, but is, indeed, a sundial. The steep, steep, uphill streets of small palaces, but very large palaces for all that, with marble terraces looking down into close byways the magnificent and innumerable churches, and the rapid passage from a street of stately edifices, into a maze of the vilest squalor, steaming with unwholesome stenches, and swarming with half-naked children, and whole worlds of dirty people make up, altogether, such a scene of wonder. So lively, and yet so dead. So noisy, and yet so quiet. So obtrusive, and yet so shy and lowering. So wide awake, and yet so fast asleep, that it is a sort of intoxication to a stranger to walk on, and on, and on, and look about him. A bewildering phantasmagoria, with all the inconsistency of a dream, and all the pain and all the pleasure of an extravagant reality. The different uses to which some of these palaces are applied, all at once, is characteristic. For instance, the English banker, my excellent and hospitable friend, has his office in a good-sized palazzo in the Strada Nuova, in the hall every inch of which is elaborately painted, but which is as dirty as a police station in London. A hook-nosed Saracen's head with an immense quantity of black hair, there is a man attached to it, sells walking sticks. On the other side of the doorway, a lady with a showy handkerchief for headdress, wife to the Saracen's head, I believe, sells articles of her own knitting, and sometimes flowers. A little further in, two or three blind men occasionally beg. Sometimes, they are visited by a man without legs, on a little go-cart, but who has such a fresh-colored lively face, and such a respectable, well-conditioned body, that he looks as if he had sunk into the ground up to his middle, or had come, but partially, up a flight of cellar steps to speak to somebody. A little further in, a few men, perhaps, lie asleep in the middle of the day, or they may be chairmen waiting for their absent freight. If so, they have brought their chairs in with them, and there they stand also. On the left of the hall, is a little room, a hatter's shop. On the first floor, is the English bank. On the first floor also, is a whole house, and a good large residence too. Heaven knows what there may be above that, but when you are there, you have only just begun to go upstairs. And yet, coming downstairs again, thinking of this, and passing out at a great crazy door in the back of the hall, instead of turning the other way, to get into the street again, it bangs behind you, making the dismalest, and most lonesome echoes, and you stand in a yard, the yard of the same house, which seems to have been unvisited by human foot, for 100 years. Not a sound disturbs its repose. Not a head, thrust out of any of the grim, dark, jealous windows, within sight, makes the weeds in the cracked pavement faint of heart, by suggesting the possibility of there being hands to grub them up. Opposite to you, is a giant figure carved in stone, reclining, with an urn, upon a lofty piece of artificial rock work, and out of the urn, dangles the fag end of a leaden pipe, which, once upon a time, poured a small torrent down the rocks. But the eye sockets of the giant are not drier than this channel is now. He seems to have given his urn, which is nearly upside down, a final tilt, and after crying, like a sepulchral child, all gone. apostrophe two have lapsed into a stony silence. In the streets of shops, the houses are much smaller, but of great size notwithstanding, and extremely high. They are very dirty, quite undrained, if my nose be at all reliable, and emit a peculiar fragrance, like the smell of very bad cheese, kept in very hot blankets. Notwithstanding the height of the houses, there would seem to have been a lack of room in the city, for new houses are thrust in everywhere. Wherever it has been possible to cram a tumble-down tenement into a crack or corner, in it has gone. If there be a nook or angle in the wall of a church, or a crevice in any other dead wall, of any sort, there you are sure to find some kind of habitation, looking as if it had grown there, like a fungus. Against the government house, against the old senate house, round about any large building, little shops stick so close, like parasite vermin to the great carcass. And for all this, look where you may. Up steps, down steps, anywhere, everywhere. There are irregular houses, receding, starting forward, tumbling down, leaning against their neighbors, crippling themselves or their friends by some means or other, until one, more irregular than the rest, chokes up the way, and you can't see any further. One of the rottenest-looking parts of the town, I think, is down by the landing wharf. Though it may be that its being associated with a great deal of rottenness on the evening of our arrival has stamped it deeper in my mind. Here, again, the houses are very high, and are of an infinite variety of deformed shapes, and have, as most of the houses, have something hanging out of a great many windows, and wafting its frozy fragrance on the breeze. Sometimes, it is a curtain, sometimes, it is a carpet, sometimes, it is a bed, sometimes, a whole line full of clothes, but there is almost always something. Before the basement of these houses is an arcade over the pavement. Very massive, dark, and low, like an old crypt. The stone, or plaster, of which it is made, has turned quite black, and against every one of these black piles, all sorts of filth and garbage seem to accumulate spontaneously. Beneath some of the arches, the sellers of macaroni and polenta establish their stalls, which are by no means inviting. The offal of a fish market, near at hand, that is to say, of a back lane, where people sit upon the ground, and on various old bulkheads and sheds, and sell fish when they have any to dispose of, and of a vegetable market, constructed on the same principle, are contributed to the decoration of this quarter. And as all the mercantile business is transacted here, and it is crowded all day, it has a very decided flavor about it. The Porto Franco, or free port, where goods brought in from foreign countries pay no duty until they are sold and taken out, as in a bonded warehouse in England, is down here also, and two portentous officials, in cocked hats, stand at the gate, to search you if they choose, and to keep out monks and ladies. For, sanctity as well as beauty has been known to yield to the temptation of smuggling, and in the same way. That is to say, by concealing the smuggled property beneath the loose folds of its dress. So sanctity and beauty may, by no means, enter. The streets of Genoa would be all the better for the importation of a few priests of prepossessing appearance. Every fourth or fifth man in the streets is a priest or a monk, and there is pretty sure to be at least one itinerant ecclesiastic inside, or outside every hackney carriage on the neighboring roads. I have no knowledge, elsewhere, of more repulsive countenances than are to be found among these gentry. If nature's handwriting be at all legible, greater varieties of sloth, deceit, and intellectual torpor could hardly be observed among any class of men in the world. Mr. Pepys once heard a clergyman assert in his sermon, in illustration of his respect for the priestly office, that if he could meet a priest and angel together, he would salute the priest first. I am rather of the opinion of Petrarch, who who, when his pupil Boccaccio wrote to him in great tribulation, that he had been visited and admonished for his writings by a Carthusian friar who claimed to be a messenger immediately commissioned by heaven for that purpose, replied, that for his own part, he would take the liberty of testing the reality of the commission by personal observation of the messenger's face, eyes, forehead, behavior, and discourse. I cannot but believe myself, from similar observation, that many unaccredited celestial messengers may be seen skulking through the streets of Genoa, or droning away their lives in other Italian towns. Perhaps the Cappuccini, though not a learned body, are, as an order, the best friends of the people. They seem to mingle with them more immediately, as their counselors and comforters, and to go among them more, when they are sick, and to pry less than some other orders, into the secrets of families, for the purpose of establishing a baleful ascendancy over their weaker members, and to be influenced by a less fierce desire to make converts, and once made, to let them go to ruin, soul and body. They may be seen, in their coarse dress, in all parts of the town at all times, and begging in the markets early in the morning. The Jesuits, too, muster strong in the streets, and go slinking noiselessly about, in pairs, like black cats. In some of the narrow passages, distinct trades congregate. There is a street of jewelers, and there is a row of booksellers. But even down in places where nobody ever can, or ever could, penetrate in a carriage, there are mighty old palaces shut in among the gloomiest and closest walls, and almost shut out from the sun. Very few of the tradesmen have any idea of setting forth their goods, or disposing them for show. If you, a stranger, want to buy anything, you usually look round the shop till you see it, then clutch it, if it be within reach, and inquire how much. Everything is sold at the most unlikely place. If you want coffee, you go to a sweetmeat shop, and if you want meat, you will probably find it behind an old check curtain, down half a dozen steps, in some sequestered nook as hard to find, as if the commodity were poison, and Genoa's law were death to any that uttered it. Most of the apothecaries' shops are great lounging places. Here, grave men with sticks, sit down in the shade for hours together, passing a meager Genoa paper from hand to hand, and talking, drowsily and sparingly, about the news. Two or three of these are poor physicians, ready to proclaim themselves on an emergency, and tear off with any messenger who may arrive. You may know them by the way in which they stretch their necks to listen, when you enter, and by the sigh with which they fall back again into their dull corners, on finding that you only want medicine. Few people lounge in the barbers' shops, though they are very numerous, as hardly any man shaves himself. But the apothecaries has its group of loungers, who sit back among the bottles, with their hands folded over the tops of their sticks. So still and quiet, that either you don't see them in the darkened shop, or mistake them as I did one ghostly man in bottle green one day, with a hat like a stopper for horse medicine. On a summer evening the Genese are as fond of putting themselves, as their ancestors were of putting houses, in every available inch of space in, and about the town. In all the lanes and alleys, and up every little ascent, and on every dwarf wall, and on every flight of steps, they cluster like bees. Meanwhile, and especially on festa days, the bells of the churches ring incessantly, not in peals, or any known form of sound, but in a horrible, irregular, jerking, dingle, 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 with a sudden stop at every 15th dingle or so, which is maddening. This performance is usually achieved by a boy up in the steeple, who takes hold of the clapper, or a little rope attached to it, and tries to dingle louder than every other boy similarly employed. The noise is supposed to be particularly obnoxious to evil spirits. But looking up into the steeples, and seeing and hearing these young Christians thus engaged, one might very naturally mistake them for the enemy. Festa days, early in the autumn, are very numerous. All the shops were shut up, twice within a week, for these holidays. And one night, all the houses in the neighborhood of a particular church were illuminated, while the church itself was lighted, outside, with torches. And a grove of blazing links was erected, in an open space outside one of the city gates. This part of the ceremony is prettier and more singular a little way in the country, where you can trace the illuminated cottages all the way up a steep hillside, and where you pass festoons of tapers, wasting away in the starlight night, before some lonely little house upon the road. On these days, they always dress the church of the saint in whose honor the festa is holden, very gaily. Gold embroidered festoons of different colors hang from the arches, the altar furniture is set forth, and sometimes, even the lofty pillars are swathed from top to bottom in tight-fitting draperies. The cathedral is dedicated to Saint Lorenzo. On Saint Lorenzo's day, we went into it, just as the sun was setting. Although these decorations are usually in very indifferent taste, the effect, just then, was very superb indeed. For the whole building was dressed in red, and the sinking sun, streaming in, through a great red curtain in the chief doorway, made all the gorgeousness its own. When the sun went down, and it gradually grew quite dark inside, except for a few twinkling tapers on the principal altar, and some small dangling silver lamps, it was very mysterious and effective. But, sitting in any of the churches towards evening, is like a mild dose of opium. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.